The New York Times app has all this stuff that you may not have seen.
The way the tabs are at the top with all of the different sections.
I can immediately navigate to something that matches what I'm feeling.
Play Wordle or Connections and then swipe over to read today's headlines.
There's an article next to a recipe, next to games, and it's just easy to get everything in one place.
This app is essential.
The New York Times app. All of the times, all in one place.
Download it now at nytimes.com/app.
First I go whip out the bow. No, I can't hit on no brakes. My life is out of control. I'm telling you, nobody's safe. I've been living my life limbo. My ice, it came with a tray. So high, I gotta have my face.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast. Your curiously intrusive but not wholly unwelcome mixtape DJ tag of music news and criticism. I'm John Caramonica, a critic at the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at the New York Times.
It's Cardi season. It's Cardi season. There is going to be a subset of listeners who are extremely excited for Cardi season. Shout out to our colleague, Jacob. And then there are going to be a subset of listeners who are going to say, where are we landing? What is Cardi season? Well, Playboi Carti, the Atlanta rapper, sometime rapper, has just released Music, which is his fourth full-length album. It follows a whole lot of Red from 2020. Playboi Carti is perhaps the most discussed rapper on the internet, one of the most thirsted after in terms of his musical output. And from what I can tell, in terms of how he presents to the world, perhaps one of the least interested in fame or conventional rap stardom, no matter how big his fan base is and how fast it's growing. At the beginning of the episode, we were listening to part of Evil Jordan, which is one of the more pop-leaning, quote-unquote, records on Music.
That's one way to put it.
Quote unquote. That's crazy. So today we're going to talk about Cardi's new album. Joe is here, and we're joined by Kieran Press Reynolds. Kieran is the internet music columnist for Pitchfork, writes for plenty of other places, including the New York Times. And I shudder to think what his phone screen apps and time look like. Kieran, thank you for putting the phone down briefly to come and talk to us. How are you doing?
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. You know, my screen time isn't as bad as most. I think I got it down to 2 hours now.
Oh, so wow.
You're just packing it in. A lot of laptop time.
Okay.
I think that's right. Where my focus goes.
Is that the next level?
I don't know. I heard like kids are throwing away laptops. So maybe it's not. Maybe I'm like old head now.
You're a little old school. Yeah. If you're spending most of your time digging through the content mines via laptop screen as opposed to
I can only handle so many iPhone. Instagram reels.
I literally, my Joe, what is your screen time?
Oh, I'd say it varies wildly.
Mine is like usually 6 to 8.
Okay. Yeah. That's a bad week for
that's
me.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah. I like to keep it between 3 and 4 if I can, but that's a goal, not a norm.
What do we think Playboi Carti's screen time is while we're here?
Oof. 19 hours?
It's like 19 or
it's like
zero.
1 hour.
It could be 0.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. It could be 0 because he could have multiple people on staff who are just looking at phones for him.
Yeah.
But then again, he also has like multiple Finstas and pages and pops up. Like sometimes he's feels like he's everywhere online and sometimes it feels like he's nowhere, which I think is part of the game.
Right. Does he even run his Finstas? I think.
I have no idea.
Like it's Burberry area.
It's hard to tell. But I do think he must be scrolling.
You ever see those videos of Chinese live stream sellers and they're selling like skirts and sneakers to 400 phone cameras?
Yes.
Those are the Cardi content mines, like somewhere.
Yes.
Somewhere in an Atlanta warehouse, there's just a bunch of post-opium kids with 400 phones.
50 different accounts.
Various Discords, various message boards, etc.
The Cardi content farm. Oh, God.
So Music is 30 songs long, which is both a conspicuous and conscious decision and also a kind of like, well, let's just drop it all on their heads. I wonder if we could start by talking a little bit about the choice to make the album that size, especially when the songs themselves are so small and short by and large. What do you think the point of making if this was the 90s, the equivalent album would have been like a three CD set. So this, for this yes. era, this mm-hmm. is a packed and big album. What do you think the idea behind making it such a quote unquote event size record is?
I think there's a lot of different ways to think about it. I think maximalism is built into the Playboi Carti project in general. Then you add the fact that he has not released an album for almost 5 years and the rabid, insane, dare I say, anticipation that came with every teaser, every snippet, every leak, of which there were dozens or hundreds. Mm. At this point, it's so hard for me to tell if a Playboi Carti snippet or leak is real or not, or if it's from decade or if it's from almost 10 years ago. It's so nonstop. If Carti is part of your algorithm, the amount of Carti scraps that you're fed at any given time is so intense. And almost impossible to sort through. So it only makes sense to me that when you get an album, it feels the same way. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think, Karen, about the size of this? Of course it's 30 songs is how I felt.
I don't know. I mean, it feels like a massive brain dump in a way, which I think what you're saying, like there's just so many leaks, so much like expectation on him. And I think, I mean, the past two albums are not exactly conceptual, but they have like a consistent kind of like coherent sound the entire time, like Dial It and Whole Lotta Red. And I think with this one, people are expecting him to continue to be like wildly innovative or inventive in some way. And he does do that in like certain instances, but I think it feels like he wants to throw everything at the wall instead of just being like, here's one thing, like gonna try and make everybody happy. And in some ways, he said a couple days before, I think that he wanted to be like the Travis Scott of Atlanta with this album. And I think in some ways, this is by spreading himself so far with this one, he's trying to make like a definitive case for why he is like the GOAT of this generation or this decade or something.
It's a bit of a strange touch point because it's not that Travis Scott is not, you know, famous and successful and selling out stadiums and things of that nature. Like, obviously, for a template for a contemporary rap superstar, I would say Travis is like maybe far more reachable and relatable than Drake. But I don't know. To me, there's something evanescent and not tactile about Travis Scott's music. And also you catch this on the Travis features on this album. Whereas the one thing that I've really admired about Carti, especially in the Whole Lotta Red era, is how committed to a style and sound he is. Like, Whole Lotta Red is, I mean, Kieran, to your point, it's not like a idea record when you think of ideas written on a page, but it is coherent as hell when it comes to the sounds. And maybe let's listen to something off Whole Lotta Red. Should we just play Rockstar Made just right off the top?
Sure. Off of that bitch in the backseat, off of that bitch in the wag, off of that bitch in the backseat, now that bitch ragging, 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 got the bitch ragging, took the bitch to LA, now the bitch ragging, I just killed her up, yeah, I swear I'm counting cash. So Carti, to me, the ideology of Carti has been sound,
and we've talked about his music in that era in relation to whether it's industrial or hardcore or certain seams of punk. And the one thing that I was wondering if Music, the album, was going to do was amplify, double down, build on that. And I feel like it doesn't quite do that, or at least the parts that it only does it in parts. It seems to have diverse ambition on this new album.
I hear three different potential Playboi Carti albums within Music. I hear the Astroworld, which is Travis Scott basically reaching back to all of the things that made him. And with Carti, going back to your point about being the Travis Scott of Atlanta, there's a lot of Atlanta throwback on here. There's samples of Rich Kids. There's samples of Bankroll Fresh songs. There's references to Lil Wayne and Gucci Mane, who Lil Wayne, honorary Atlanta rapper, the namesake of this album, the I Am Music robe from the Steady Mobbin' video.
The Swamp Izzo tags.
There's a lot of old school Atlanta. There's a lot of Future homage here. There's a lot of Future features. There's a lot of songs that sound like Future features, but are just played by Carti.
And I had to check so there's lot. The. I had to do some
yeah, same. Yeah. I mean, there's some where I'm like, that's definitely future, and it's not future at all. And then there's the future ones where I'm like, is that future? We can come back to this when we start talking about specifics. There is the Atlanta Lineage album here somewhere. And then there's the real ambitious pop-leaning, there's Travis Scott features, takes me out of it almost every time. There's Kendrick Lamar features. There's a very melodic Kendrick Lamar, Jhené Aiko song, Backdoor, on here. There's a Weeknd song, Rather Lie, that sounds like it could be on Hot 97 or even Z100, and probably will be. And there's a lot of stuff that goes in the direction that I thought Cardi was teasing last year, when it seemed like he was going to be more of a participant in the fame and press cycles that come with rolling out an album. But then he decided to take 18 more months or whatever it was. So there's that stuff that does feel like a bit of a concession to commercial aspirations or ambitions, which is not something I've typically associated with Cardi.
Which he's been leaning towards.
Yeah, he's been hinting at.
Our favorite Camila Cabello record.
Yes, as I've noted many times, one of my favorite verses and songs from last year, Playboi Carti and Camila Cabello. But then there's like the boundary pushing stuff. Then there's the stuff that's really out there and seems like he's creating a new wave of rage rap or noise rap or whatever it is you want to call it. I'm thinking of like Opium Baby or I See You Baby Boy, Wake Up Filthy, like the sort of real defining Cardi stuff, where it's like he could have made an album that just sounded like that and people would have received it, I think, like they received Dilator or Whole Lotta Red in terms of cohesion. But instead, it's like all of this stuff thrown together, which makes for a really weird 30-song listen straight through, because you're constantly being yanked in different directions. But it does make for, I think, a good 2025 album, which is like taking bits and pieces that apply to different people or different situations. There's a lot of use cases for the 30 songs on this album. I just don't know if the use case is listening from song one to song 30.
It's giving Drake playlist era albums a little bit, like that kind of 17, 18. Don't listen to this as an album. It's a playlist. And it's, and also the chaos from track to track, actually, I mean, I'm hesitant to say how intentional this was, but last year, every couple weeks, you'd be like, oh, new Cardi, oh, new leak, new snippet. Listening to this album is not dissimilar from the anticipation of not knowing what version of Cardi you're going to get next.
Yeah. I mean, Karen, what version of Cardi are you most interested in at this point in his career? And is it reflected enough on music, this album?
I will say I have always been a Dilit truther. That was always the era of Cardi. Like when he was going with the baby voice and kind of taking it to a new level. I mean, he had this a verse on Pain 1993, but Drake, that song years ago, where it was almost like a fetus voice. And I wanted him to go even more. I was like, where's the zygote voice?
6:45 AR.
Yes. And voice. I think because of people like 6:45 AR and maybe Cochise, like Baby Keem, people who were immediately taking his swag, I think maybe he got put off that sound in a way. Like he was like, this is as far as I can take it. But I also liked the rage stuff. And I was very curious on this album to see what would come up. And I think, I mean, immediately, like it opens with a song that sounds like he's recording it directly after recording Whole Lotta Red. Like he sounds exhausted, like asphyxiated.
Talking about Pop Out.
Pop Out. And so I thought, I was expecting after hearing that to hear a lot more like that. And it just is so scattered, like a carnival of different sounds. I mean, I think to me, like what you're saying, John, like this playlist album idea, it feels to me like almost like a monoculture album. Like it wants to be like Cardi coming off this run of being like the Ty Dolla $ign of the 2020s with all these like features,
that's,
you know?
To me, that's an insult.
Well, more in the sense of like, people are using him as like the extra spice on these. Not if he's like as bland as Ty Dolla $ign, but he's this extra ingredient that is going to make like Fiend, Camila Cabello, like all these timeless, all these songs. And so I think the jumping point from there for him is like, how do I make an album that appeals to both like the fried opium kids and also a 35-year-old listener who is not into the Whole Lotta Red sound necessarily?
Yeah, I think you mentioned Fiend, the Travis Scott song. There's also Carnival, the Kanye West song. Those are the two biggest songs of Playboi Carti's career, basically, in terms of a mainstream moment. They're in television commercials. They're nominated for Grammys. Like, they're very down the middle. And you're right. People are like using his sauce to appeal to a younger generation. Like Kanye's only real big hit of the last however many years is this song that sounds like a Playboi Carti song with a dash of Travis Scott pretending like he's Playboi Carti. And one of the things that I was most interested in talking to you about, Karen, on this episode is these cycles of influence, because I hear two different things happening here where it's Cardi being influenced by the 2010 rap superstar, rap caviar starting five that's all over this album. Travis Scott, Kendrick Lamar, The Weeknd, Future, and Lil Uzi Vert. And Cardi has taken from those guys, and then those guys have then in turn taken from Cardi, and they push each other both forwards and backwards, and it's this symbiotic loop of influence. And then Cardi also has that relationship with the rage rap underground that you're referring to, his opium label, Destroy Lonely, all of the Cardi clones that have come after. I didn't mention Young Thug. He's the other rap caviar superstar.
He's another Cardi clone.
Another.
Maybe the worst, unfortunately, I hate to say it, maybe the worst song on this album.
Yeah, well, so We Need All the Vibes, Young Thug song featuring Ty Dolla Sign, as previously alluded to. This song is literally an old Thug Gunna leak that Cardi refurbished, basically. He reupholstered an old Thug leftover, which is why it sounds like an old Thug leftover. Mm-hmm. But in addition to Cardi being in dialogue with those guys, who are then all over this album, he's also in dialogue with the underground, which he's both the patron saint of, and they're all trying to be him, but then he then takes from them. Like, I'm thinking of someone like Skywater, who we've talked about on a previous episode of Popcast, who sounds like he listens to Playboi Carti, and then now it sounds like Playboi Carti listens to Skywater.
Can I add one, before Kieran jumps in, can I just add one note to maybe, like, complicate what you just said slightly? Because I think it feels, like, factually very correct. But the thing that I kept feeling when I was listening to this album is every time one of those guys showed up, Kendrick, Future, Thug, maybe slightly less so with The Weeknd, but every Travis for sure. But every time one of those guys showed up, I was like, it's not worth the trade-off. Like, whatever is coming, whether it's Spotify streams or potential radio play or a cool video or a cool moment at some concert 6 months from now when Cardi gets on stage with Future, gets on stage with Travis, it's not worth it. None of those guys are, and I don't think they should necessarily, they're not conceding to the moment. And this is like, when I think about guest features, and I think the quality of your guest feature is correlated to the amount that you respect the person that you're providing a guest feature to. That's how I historically think about those things.
Sure, the Kanye rule.
But my thing with this, with these guest features, is these guys, maybe Kendrick slightly, and maybe The Weeknd slightly, but these guys don't, even Future doesn't understand Cardi. And so Future's just...
See, I disagree. I think Future's the only person who belongs on this album.
I would say in the past, they get him. He did, like... On Teen X and Whole Lotta Red, Future did the thing of imitating Cardi's own baby voice. They were like baby voicing, Martianing in sync. But on this album, he doesn't do that. So
but now Cardi's doing deep voice Future ripoffs.
Right, he went the other way.
Then Future goes even deeper more staccato. Funny. To me, John, I hear you on the features. I totally agree. The features are, it's stepped on. It dilutes the purity of the Playboi Carti vision to hear these geriatrics.
Yeah, real talk.
try to play with the kids, especially Kendrick Lamar. To me, you know, I think his appearances here have been very polarizing, and I think maybe we'll listen to a little bit of Kendrick on Good Credit.
Let's do that now. Let's listen.
Yeah,
to
okay, fine. Pass out matters, moving them matters, sense on my body. Kids on my body, and that's all my kids. I kid with nobody. You know what this is, the vamps and the boogies. We just do the party. What you listening to is that?
Joe's gonna start angry tweeting about Kendrick Lamar's verses.
this just doesn't work for me.
What about Mojo Jojo? I thought, okay, the ad-libs, I'm like, he's the only one who's trying to cosplay as someone in Cardi's universe.
That I agree, but correct. It feels so much like cosplay, whereas Future, to me, I think they are natural collaborators, whereas Kendrick's is like, Kendrick is a great student, and he has plenty of voices of his own, and so he can contort himself to fit in here. But I do not listen to a Playboi Carti album to hear Kendrick Lamar. Like, just like, to me, they're like, and I know he likes this idea that they're supposed to be diametrically opposed, but they can, in fact, coexist. And when he's name dropping different eras of Carti and really showing that he's dialed in, I get it. I mean, but I just do not need to ever hear Kendrick Lamar say Vamp Life Spooky ever again.
Joe, my evil twin. Yeah, I mean, Joe, my evil twin.
I need an extraterrestrial card.
But talk to us about, I mean, the less said about Skepta's presence here, I think the better. But talk to us a little bit about what you think of the guest choices here.
I thought the guest choices were very telling in a way. One of the lines that stuck out to me the most was from Munyan, where he's like, talking about women and Molly, and then he keeps on repeating.
Oh, imagine
like,
that.
Yeah, that's something that happens on a Cardi album. But then he's like, can't believe I made Forbes. Like, over and over again, I made Forbes. And it's like, you're so big, you're so famous, and you're still obsessing over making a Forbes list. I feel almost like the features, maybe he wants to be with people who he sees as on his level, but maybe also he's angling for a Grammy or like some award, or like he wants to
You think he wants the recognition from the mainstream?
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think
he,
so.
I mean, I think in a way he does. Like, he wants to be known as this monumental force who can reach all sides of the culture. But it does also feel like he took some bad advice from, like, some text driver CEO where it's like, only surround yourself with the most successful entrepreneurs you know. And like
only people who are bigger than you belong
Gary
on your
Veed
album.
It? Right. You're saying and he Gary Veed the album?
He Gary Veed it. He did the whole, I think that, also, to an extent, if he thinks that he has inspired and spawned this whole wave of underground people, even like thinking that he is responsible for Ken Carson and Destroy Lonely Success, I could see him not wanting or thinking it's like, he doesn't want to stoop to the level of like his imitators in a sense, or like,
I mean, they're not on the album. They're literally not.
You're right. It is a very strong statement to only include people who are older and more successful and nobody who is on the come up, basically.
Yeah, and I think that was strange. I think he still could have reached back, and we could have had Space Ghost Perp on the album instead of just sampling like one of his most known songs. It's like he could have done a lot of more interesting things with the guest list, and it felt very safe to me.
And I think the exception is in the sampling and the beat choice and the references. I mentioned in passing, there's song here that samples the same sample as a big NBA YoungBoy song. And that seems like a nod to his peers as opposed to his idols. Going back to like Wheezy, which has the Rich Kids Bend Over sample, which is an Atlanta teen classic. Let's listen to a little bit of...
Can we play? Yeah, we gotta play Rich Kids Bend Over.
We'll play both. Play a little bit of Bend Over and then play a little bit of like Wheezy.
What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
This is very much Lineage in a literal way. So you have Swamp Izzo, the mixtape DJ, throughout this. Swamp Izzo hosted the original Young Thug tapes, I Came From Nothing, I Came From Nothing Too. And Rich Kids have the first major Young Thug verse, you know, $1 million bill. Like there's a very discreet blueprint.
It's precise.
Yes, being laid out here, but it's only in passing and it's only if you choose to look at it.
Can I read you just one sentence? I was just reading up on Swamp Izzo. Can I just read one sentence from some random website that I saw?
Sure.
He previously served as the official DJ for President Barack Obama's international military tour.
Do we have a vlog from nothing, that just, era?
Unclear. Just look, that's, you want to know what, kids want to know what soft power is? This is soft power.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say.
That's a proxy war. Can we get some Swamp Izzo tags on the podcast?
Yeah, yeah. Like, let's just we'll drop send him a little Swamp Izzo tag right here.
He'd do it.
Yeah. This is something we've seen over the years. Tyler, the Creator, did this with DJ Drama on an album of basically making your event album feel like a Dat Piff mixtape. Do you see more nostalgia in music, or do you see more forward-looking? Because I think we've always thought of Cardi as a seer of the future, but there's a lot of nostalgia here, and I wonder how you're dealing with that push and pull.
I think that's the thing that makes this album hard to take in one go, is that it's like both, right? There's definitely that heavy nostalgia, and there's also, I mean, there are a lot of like forward-thinking sounds in a few of the songs, like I See You, Baby Boy is cool. That does feel like a Dial-It era song, but modernized in a sense, or brain-rotted in a way, like in that stimulating sense. Like Opium Baby is one of my favorite songs on here, which is maybe a polarizing take, but I think people were like accusing Swamp Izzo of like stumbling and falling over the soundboard and just like mashing buttons. But I was like, maybe he heard Osama-san and was like, yeah, we need... And I think for a guy who's always does these kind of like mosaics of hieroglyphic sounds, like it fits.
Is it possible? I mean, again, I don't like to belabor an artist's intent, because ultimately you're assessing the work more than the intent. But is it possible that we, the three of us, and the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people parsing this album online in real time, are thinking about these particular connections and threads more intently than Cardi and Cardi's people? Is Cardi seeing this like a data dump? Yeah, I have some songs that have super famous people and maybe they'll be hits. And yeah, I have some songs that sample records that were important to me when I grew up. And yeah, I have some songs that sound like a car getting sawed in half by a pneumatic drill. Like, I have all those songs and I'm just dumping them all because they're going to leak anyway. So like, why not just get them on the boards, get the points on the boards.
Right. Or these are just my 30 best songs that haven't leaked yet.
That's what I'm
right,
saying. Right. Is it possible that all of these kind of struggles to find meaning and coherence perhaps aren't intended?
I think that's fair enough. And I think ultimately, like you're saying, it doesn't really matter because it's going to be received in all of these different ways. And I think that's part of the Playboi Carti magic, if you are a follower and a fan, is the community aspect. And I think there's some Grateful Dead to Carti that, and I've said this before, it's a collector's thing. It's not necessarily about the albums themselves. It's about the different versions. We played Evil Jordan at the top of this show. Like, all of a sudden, Evil Jordan has a new intro on this album, and we can talk about why that might be. But it's comparing, contrasting. It's, oh, the mix is different. He's updating the mix on this song. It's this. What are you hearing here? Which voice is he using? Who's playing the guitar solo, or what distortion did they choose to use in 76 as opposed to 72? It's a connoisseur rabbit hole. And what is Playboi Carti good at? I keep getting this question. I think he's good at being vocally inventive. He's good at choosing beats. He has an ear for what he likes, but also he's good at bringing people together to fill the void of his career and personality with their own input. It's very choose your own adventure. It's like you can project whatever you want onto the Playboi Carti experience and find people who like that side of it with you, or fight against people who don't like that part of it. Like, what have you seen in the deep recesses of the Playboi Carti internet where you live, or at least spend time, where you timeshare? how is the fan base that has been clamoring for this album, like, how are they reacting to this? And are you seeing changes between the Playboi Carti fans of 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago and today when he's bigger than ever?
It's so hard to even just get one fan response just because of, I mean, like you're saying, it's just such like a monsoon of like reactions. I mean, I remember like back 7 years ago in the Dial It era, that's when I was like really foraging for the leaks. And I think some of his best stuff like Ken Coon and Pissy Pamper, Molly, all these like old kind of famous Carti leaks were dropping. That is when I feel like this sort of feverish like cult situation started happening. It's only increased from there. I think I remember seeing a post on Reddit when, like, one of the many, like, a million times he promised an album and it didn't drop. And people were like, group suicide. It's not even funny. It's like a Jonestown situation kind of thing. And I think AI has made that even worse, where it's like, now there are entire, like, AI Carti albums on YouTube that sound almost as good as Carti. And what is the real thing? It's he has just really mastered this, like, lore crafting, like, system. And I think it's just so tempestuous even among fans, where some are like, I think because Whole Lotta Red took a while to sink in and people were hating at first and they came around to it, people are like, it's the Whole Lotta Red effect. People are hating for no reason. Other people are like, I think a lot of people are, it's been 5 years and we got this. It's obviously, it's so hard to drop something after 5 years in this day and age and have it feel worthwhile. But there are a lot of people who are enjoying it clearly. And some of the songs are going wild on TikTok already.
One thing that I just want to add, Joe, to your list of things that Carti is good at, is he's good at rejection. He's good at rejecting the trappings of fame. He's good at rejecting, except for here and there, high-profile collaborations that maybe don't totally serve him. Although we can debate the specifics as far as what's on this album, but he could have moved that direction much faster and much more intently much earlier, and he never did. He's also been good at rejecting fan expectation. And this is something I think a lot about in the sort of like pandemic era and beyond, and the intersection of pandemic era and rage rap. If you are a fan of Playboi Carti in the Whole Lotta Red era, all you had were abstractions on the internet, basically. You didn't have all that much to cling on to. And even you see like with the Rolling Loud performance that happened this past weekend, all this energy is focused on this one performance because people just don't know if it's going to happen again. I remember maybe a year and a half ago, there was like a Carti tour and it was supposed to play Madison Square Garden. I was like, oh my God, amazing. Like, you know, mark my calendar, can't wait. And then just the tour dates disappeared. And then that happened again. Carti's rejection of all these ordinary things that every other rap star and aspiring rap star do, to me, that's his signature art form. And then what ends up happening is the space has to get filled because there is an unmet demand for Playboi Carti content.
Yeah, and it builds mystique. I mean, the one of the best lines on this album from Fine Shit is, I just canceled one of my shows to watch me a film, because it really sums up the whole experience.
I think the word you're looking for is aura, Joe.
Yes.
I think one of his, the most genius thing is, maybe genius, maybe unsettling, disturbing, is the way that he has inspired this cottage industry of shitpost influencers to worship him. And it follows the whole underground ecosystem right now. People like Che, like even Sofago, that whole world. And it's the point where like any information surrounding Carti, like even the smallest little like micro gossip,
which may or may not be true.
Right. And it's often not even true. And it gets pumped out to these millions and millions of people. And because of the way that, like, I think social media algorithms work now, like, you got the For You page TikTok thing now on Twitter. And you basically just get engulfed in this, like, rage bait and gossip the whole time. And it makes it feel like it's so important. And I think a lot of rappers now are starting to like wise up to it. And I think with this album, Carti did the next evolution of like the Taylor Swift, like Grateful Dead, like Easter egg collector vibe of like, him or his manager are like feeding little bits of info out to like Kai Cenat and like Kirko and like all these random streamers. And so then they're giving it out to their people and it's, oh my God, it's finally happening. And it's like the ultimate kind of album as puzzle. And so I don't want to compare it to like a Trumpian sense, but like in the rap world, he has managed to like dominate the information ecosystem. And like, it's where these accounts and these people treat him as like a god. And some of it's like definitely ironic. It's the same thing with someone like Netspend, where, you know, you don't know if you fully like him, but you're going to follow him because it's like he's the guy everyone's talking
totally.
About.
And much like the music itself, like Cardi's doing it on multiple levels because he's collaborating with the streamers and the meme accounts and the 42 CEO and whatever this sort of online shitpost economy is. But then at the same time, it's Spotify billboards and it's an album launch tied to a Rolling Loud headline performance. Like, he's working both angles at the same time. And you mentioned Trump and it's too neat, but I do think we should spend a moment on the sort of masculinity of all of this and this whole movement and this whole album. I have never met a woman who likes to listen to Playboi Carti. Maybe it's because of my age, but I just haven't. And it makes sense.
That can't be real.
I have a couple friends.
I don't
friends.
Buy that.
Look, I'm being partially glib, but also anecdotally.
This is like when Cameron told us in 50 Rappers that women didn't want to listen to Nas in 1995 or whatever. It's not. Is that what you're suggesting? Because to me, it's totally
okay. You got a Cash Cobain beat. Come
I mean,
on.
I'm half joking, but totally seriously, there is a toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
To Playboi Carti fandom, rage rap. I mean, he has been accused of physical violence against women in real life. There's a hook on here that is literally the mosh pit is so toxic. He's literally saying the mosh pit is too toxic. That's a hook here. Like, that's a plain spoken lyric. Obviously only collaborates with men musically, which, fair enough, that goes for 98% of mainstream rap albums. But I don't think it is totally removed. The fact that Playboi Carti is the defining rapper of 2025 is not unrelated to, I think, the new masculinity that we're seeing in culture and in politics and a sort of unabashed boys being boys attitude.
You think Playboi Carti's likely to go on Bussin' with the Boys or...
He's got Andrew Tate.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, when he's broke.
Like, I'm not saying that that it's the same, but I think the cultural current that is carrying both things is.
But that's a Rolling Loud thing, also. That's Rolling Loud core.
Yeah, you know, of course.
It's
of
10
course.
Years of that building up to this, and the idea that the dominant physical IRL interaction with this music is at a festival, in a mosh pit, or a mosh of a several thousand people. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I take that for sure. But there's not, come on, you need more women who listen to Playboi Carti in your life.
I look, look, my wife says, this is boy rap, but not in the way that I normally mean it. which is to say, not Action Bronson or Rock Marciano, but boy, emphasis on the boy part. Because I do think what a lot of people get of Playboi Carti, and this also speaks to the way that he transcends race. Playboi Carti, there are a lot of jokes about Playboi Carti music for white kids versus non-white kids, that he does both. And I think what young men, and what, I mean, even what I tap into when I listen to Playboi Carti is like a sense of youthful abandon and like doing whatever you want and not following any rules. He doesn't show up when he says he's going to show up. He's spitting in the face of parents. There is some Odd Future, some early Tumblr Odd Future vibes to like fuck school. Like Playboi Carti, you know, fuck school. That's like, to me, that's like of a piece. Like this is detention music. And I think... Yeah. And I think that, like, you know, American culture specifically is in an era of like boys who belong in detention. Like, this album is.
Joe, did you freestyle talk. That, or did you have that written?
I freestyled it.
Incredible. That's
I Playboi Carti. I just want to punch in.
That was incredible.
Thank you. That's why that's they pay correct. Us the big bucks.
100%. You know? You've earned it. That's.
Do you think I'm reading too much into this? Or?
No, I think you're right. I think to me, like, maybe the most, like, generous reading is, like, it's himbo rap.
Sure.
It's, like, music that is, like, post-Travis in this, like, rage or nothing. Like, rage is the meaning of life kind of thing. Where it's, like, focusing on more than, like, the lyrics. And at least that's the way that I've never been a huge, like, Cardi lyrical guy. I mean, no. There's not much to... Chew on there.
Every now and then he'll have a really a film line. Every now and then I feel like he'll have a very pithy, very economical, plain stated line that is extremely memorable. Like probably once.
Yeah, it's
a
like
song,
memorable,
honestly.
But not a bar. If that makes sense.
Yeah,
like,
but and not delivered as a bar, and not. Yeah, you're
I think
certainly
that's what
not
helps
listening.
Him stand out
yeah, it's not a. It's not a vert. You're not isolating a verse. You might be isolating a line or a delivery.
It was easy to paint Cardi as like a good guy despite his lyrics. There's the whole like, maybe Cardi's bisexual. Maybe he seemed to have a more like friendly toward like effeminate male behavior in like a progressive way.
In a young thuggish way.
Yeah, in a young, very young thuggish. I mean, I don't know if Cardi ever wore a dress, but like, you know, it seemed like he was kind of expanding on that young thug sensibility.
Or at least allowing people to project that onto him.
Yeah, right. Like, I remember when Whole Lotta Red came out, he had a thing where he was wearing like a bunch of makeup and like nail polish, whatever. And I think after the allegation came out that like it painted the lyrics in a much different light. And like, especially on this album, there are some like unnerving lyrics where he like tells a woman to die. Like he's like D-I-E-D. And it makes you kind of reassess what's happening. And I don't think that Cardi is going to go on Andrew Tate. I don't think, we already saw his attitude toward Aiden Ross, which was like, you're not my kind of guy, which is like positive, I think.
Fair enough.
But I don't know, it gives me pause. And especially when you see some of the fans that listen to his stuff, and even like the people he's surrounding himself with, like Ken Carson, not a great guy. Like a lot of these opium people are not great role models for young men.
And allegedly. Like,
allegedly, yeah.
Yeah, we should just point out Cardi was arrested in 2023 for allegedly choking his girlfriend at the time. Iggy Azalea, who is the mother of one of his children, has also accused him of some unsavory things and also just immoral things on top of that.
Yeah.
So to Kieran, to your point about role model or not role model, this is the other aspect of Cardi rejecting acclaim or attention or spotlight or microphone opportunities. One of the real memorable moments in the Cardi rollout, like extended version, is when Aiden Ross, the streamer, offered him $1 million to show up, and he showed up and took the money and left. If I believe that's what happened,
he handed him a bag.
Yeah, handed him a bag of cash, and Cardi was like, "Cool," and then I'm out. Like, and then later, much later, and I think actually right around the Rolling Loud performance, basically said to Kai Cenat, like, "Ah, you know, that's not my kind of guy. Like, I didn't really want to do that. Like, that's this." But it was striking if you watch clips or a stream rip of Cardi's Rolling Loud performance, who's on that stage? Yes, The Weeknd's on the stage. People you might recognize, but who else is on that stage? Kai Cenat is on that stage. Dabo is on that stage. There are people who are primarily known as streamers, number one, but also the thing that we have been alluding to is that in the chasm that Cardi creates, streamers, shit posters, IG Reel, and TikTokers, makers, that is what fills the Cardi space. So if you are a fan of Playboy Cardi, what you really might be is a fan of Kai Cenat. What you really might be is a fan of Sad Part or 42 CEO or Hyperpod Daily or whatever. It's like
by necessity.
Yes, because there's nowhere else. There's nothing else. But the demand exists and other people will emerge to fill that demand. And so I think Cardi's rejection and absence has been incredible for the streamer ecosystem, because the premise of the streamer ecosystem is we're always here. We're always on. And Joe, to follow up on what you said before, even the tiniest tidbit of information is worth making a reel or a TikTok around or talking about on your stream. And so that's enough.
Yeah, it's not an accident that the day before this album finally dropped, when people still didn't know if it was real or not, he called DJ Academics and he played him the album on FaceTime, and DJ Academics leaked the details, and that was the confirmation that there was an album and that maybe you should stay up and wait for it, although that turned out to be a fool's errand as well. But yes, his creative use of promotional tactics. I want to zero in a little bit on something we alluded to earlier, which is the new intro for Evil Jordan, which is basically been called a TikTok play, that this intro lends itself to TikToking. Like, Karen, can you talk us through what the idea of the TikTok intro was and whether or not Cardi doing that is a concession to the idea that he needs to promote this music somehow if he's not going to show up and do interviews or whatever it may be?
So, okay, a TikTok edit intro is basically, it can be like a cinematic start, like a sort of instrumental that leads into like something that's very staggery, like drum sounds that sync up really well with a visual.
Like quick edit. Cuts.
Yeah, quick rapid fire stimuli. And they usually be for like an anime clip or of like 10 seconds of some character doing something epic, like flying or hitting a villain or like a basketball player walking.
Right. So my experience of this is the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander aura TikTok, yes, which has that build up and then the beat drop and the go from there.
Yeah.
So is this like reverse engineering virality?
It's not all the way that, because he's been using this intro for like live performances. And I think I read an interview a couple years ago, I think in the Whole Lotta Red era, where he was like, performing live is my other half or something. I think he thinks that he wants to like almost just make sure every song is going to spark like the biggest mosh pit ever. So I think having this intro and this kind of like glitch start is definitely a way of building hype. But it does feel like someone on his team heard this, he saw this himself, and they were like, this is going to do insane numbers.
And it is.
And it's the biggest song so far off the album. I think it's got like 25 million streams in a few days. That's ridiculous. And it does make me wonder if we already have NLE Choppa doing a full sped up remix album. Are we going to start having deluxe albums that are just only TikTok edit intros?
Yeah,
you know, like
I buy.
Could be similar to having like control of the shitpost economy. Like, Cardi's music and like his derivatives have such control of the TikTok sphere. There's this whole subgenre called Jug Talk, which
is
like,
And what about Jug Talk versus Slime Talk?
Oh, like, my God. You're tapped in.
Okay, let's go. Just like, I'm tapped in, but I'm also
walk us through a little bit.
Yeah, but my brain melted about halfway through thinking about it. So just walk us through.
It's very post, it's hyper Cardi. It's like, it's more like the Osama Sun and Net Spends of the world, but it's this whole kind of self-organized meme system where every day there's like new, it's a lot of, okay, it's really hard to explain, but it's a lot of like Drewski edits and very ironic posts about like gooning and about
not
edging,
safe for work. Yeah.
And
this maximalist music,
yeah,
blown out bass
and Cardi and
distorted vocals,
yeah, and just really like absurdist like shitpost songs. Like one of the biggest ones is a guy saying, I love lemonade, I don't know, for the past couple months that's been going crazy on Jug Talk. Now there's something about the meme inflation, like it's got really political recently and they're innovating new slang. It's a lot like AAVE, like, you know, TSPMO.
No, I see.
We're all the way in the weeds now.
We've gone too far, but
but yeah, this stuff is all out there. If you want to go on this journey,
if you want to hashtag Juke Talk on TikTok, you're gonna have your mind blown.
That's the Cardi experience.
Travis Scott feature is the gateway drug to Jug Talk.
The trenches.
Okay, so we've talked about the big ideas here, and we've mentioned a lot of these tracks, but can we focus a little bit on songs that you think either really do work or really don't? John, is there stuff on here that we haven't touched on that's either speaking to you or you're like, that's exactly what he should not be doing?
Yes. Can I just run down a few songs that I think are really good, largely because of his vocal tweaks and trying out different types of voices and flows? I like K-pop. I like Fine Shit. I like Toxic. And to your point about the Skepta thing, I could take it or leave it, but I like the kind of implicit horror in that beat. I really think it's strong and
the mosh pit
really
real
tactile.
Toxic, like I said.
Yeah. What else? I See You, Baby Boy, Trim, Cocaine Nose.
Let's listen to Cocaine Nose.
Yeah,
I feel
it's
like
really
that,
good. The guitar this, on this. So
well,
wild.
Yeah. So this crazy Ashanti sample, like I'm sure there's a sample before the sample, but this is best known, I would say, for people between all of our ages as Ashanti, Only You. She can't wait, she wanna tap my name. Gucci size was dash to play. I put cash in the world, I'll pay. Try to spin it off, I'll pay. Lay back on the floor, I'll pay. Joe, what are the ones that you like? I've mentioned a lot in passing. A lot of the ones you mentioned, I'm with as well. I actually wanted to zero in on Rather Lie, which is the Weeknd collaboration, which, as I said before, seems like a real top 40 play to me. And yet, when I heard it at first, I thought it was super craven and cynical and empty. And the more I listen to it, I'm like, oh, there's some Trojan horsing of ideas here. I really like the way he plays the deep voice off the baby voice in the second verse. Maybe we could just listen to a little bit of that, which I think adds enough innovation to what is essentially a radio record that it still feels like a Playboi Carti song. And to me, that's like the best possible version of collaborating with someone like The Weeknd or Travis Scott, which is keeping the verses weird. I'm back on the track and off like this. I'm back on the lean on my talk like this. I'm back on the shit on my walk like this. House got a view, we go fuck like this. Niggas get mad when I talk this shit. Niggas be mad when I off this bitch. This nigga mad cause I fucked her. Back me a cougar, I'm younger. So yeah, that's one of my favorites. I've mentioned a bunch of my least favorites. I think the second half of the album, I really enjoy. Even the weird, bad thug Lil Uzi Vert songs, which take me out of it. But that whole stretch at the very end from tracks 25 to 30, HBA, Overly, South Atlanta Baby, at the very end, there's a lot there that I like. And yeah, I mean, look, what I would like most of all is an edit of this album with no guests.
Yeah.
Karen, what about you? What's working and not working? You're working, by the time this episode publishes, your edit of this album will be published on Pitchfork. Is that correct?
Yeah, as John was talking, I was like, ooh, I've suggested removing a lot of those ones.
Oh my God.
But that's the thing there. You can make any album out of.
But is your edit by quality or is your edit by coherence?
It's kind of almost like more quantity, like brevity, I think, and cutting some of the stuff that I feel like you could just get rid of, or some of the stuff doesn't work. I don't think like Philly is like a very fine song, but that's
a Travis Scott.
That's like Astroworld. That's years ago. I feel like you could definitely get rid of the Young Thug, Ty Dolla Sign. You could get rid of the Uzi song that doesn't have a Cardi verse on it. I was like, oh, interesting.
Yeah, it seems like he owed him some money or something. It was just like, I got you. Like, I'll
he
pay
lost
you.
A bet, man. He lost Fortnite.
Yeah, exactly.
Something.
But what about a standout? Should we play something we haven't already mentioned or played? That
I really charged him hoes a fee.
That's one of the Future records, yeah.
That, does it have Future on it? I think.
Yeah that's Future.
Future and Travis, Travis, right?
Yeah.
It's like the longest one on the tape. I think I like that one because it embodies what Cardo, the producer, described as like their manifesto for some of the songs, which is like burnt music or this music that feels like, to me, that sounds charred, like feculent, just like really dirty and like you're just coming off of a bender, but not in the whole lot of red sense, in the real, just, I don't know, almost like insomniac, tweaked out sense. And that
song. Yeah, it stayed up all night.
Right, right.
Vibes,
that song
for sure.
Just feels so fried in a cool way to me.
Let's listen to a little bit of that. I just want to note, you said this is the longest song on the album, and it's 3 minutes and 45 seconds.
That's it.
So I think the takeaway, especially from my selections, Joe's selections, Kieran's selections, is that there is not really, this music is an album that does not offer one direct pathway through. And I think given that there are probably three or four distinct eras of Playboi Carti fandom, and dare I say age groups that go along with those fandoms, how you receive this album and certain parts of the album is going to vary from one to the other. So maybe that's the omnibus approach that Cardi's taking, right? It's just, I got something if you were there in the SoundCloud era, I got something for you. If you were a Die Lit fan, I got something for you. If you're a whole lot of Red Vamp era, I got something for you. If you're raging at the Ken Carson show, I got something for you too. And if you think that I should be 10 times more famous than I am willing to be, I also have something for you. Maybe that is the most superstar thing you can do in 2025. I don't know.
I am interested to see how the dust settles on this, because I think, as we saw with Whole Lotta Red and really anything influential, it takes a minute, right? This album has been out for 4 days or whatever it is. And I think entire genres could be born from 15 seconds of any one of these songs, you know, and it's just like would just remain to be seen what the legacy of this album is and where it pushes things. Because I do think more than almost anyone else working at the moment, certainly more than the guys that he's surrounded himself with, like Playboi Carti is the one dictating the winds of the genre for people his age and younger. And I am convinced that music will do that in some way. It's just impossible to tell from inside the hurricane what exactly is going to come out of it.
Yeah, you're an optimist.
I am. I think I'm an optimist, but mostly I'm curious to see what people get out of this and where they take it moving forward.
I feel like I'm the same way. I mean, I feel like for the last 5 years, the entire rap, underground internet rap world has been like awaiting this album. Like it's been the final destination. And so it's almost like we've got it now. Like what comes next? And it's exciting. I think this album was, it was almost destined to fail in some way. Like it could never like reach the astronomical expectations that he stoked himself and people had for it. But this like very omnivorous approach and like citing his sources where he could and I don't know, doing this just pure maximalism, I think people are happy, people are upset. I don't know. It is definitely music though.
It is definitely music.
That is our show. Thank you to Joe, my evil twin. Thank you to Kieran. Also, Kieran writes a column on internet music, as I mentioned at the top, at Pitchfork. And I just want to shout out one of your other columns, which is close to, I assume, both Joe's heart and mine, which is about the music of Survivor.
Oh, let's go.
Which is, I mean, look, man. When I was your age, I did some real sicko stuff, but that was peak sicko column writing.
Shout out Russ Landau.
Yeah.
The god.
The goat, for real.
Just a genuinely inspiring dive into a corner of the music world that you probably are not spending a lot of time thinking about, but is fascinating. So go check that out.
Thank you for reading.
Does that mean we're going out with the Survivor theme
song?
No,
we're going out with OG, baby. Jesus. Okay.
Season 50.
Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/popcast. On YouTube, we're at youtube.com/popcast. On TikTok, we're at Popcast. On Instagram, we're at Popcast Deluxe. We're working on it. And you can subscribe to Popcast anywhere you get your audio content, Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, etc., etc. We'll be back next week. In the meanwhile, cover your ears, hide your loved ones. This is Opie. I don't get no time. I always want is a time.